I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You got something for me?
I do not.
Oh, really?
We don't have any accounts payable this week, but at some point I do. Since you're not going to be here next week, we will have accounts payable next week, and we will have an invoice that we'll receive from an attorney for $10,000.
But we're not meeting next week.
I know. So
who else is gone?
Well,
I'm gone for Doug's River gone. District.
And I'm gone for DOLA.
Right.
Okay, so that's why.
So, but again, we can meet on Monday. If we have agenda items...
That's what I was going to ask. How do you want to consider?
You two can. I'm leaving early because I have a 7-hour drive, and
so we can do an AP approval on Monday. If we can schedule that for Monday, if that's what you want to do.
I'm good with that.
Okay.
And we're going to be here anyhow. I'm going to be here.
Yeah.
I guess I was toying with the idea of not being here, but I guess I can be here.
Well, I don't really care. Whatever. So.
I was going to decide. I told Tegan I was going to decide by the end of the day. If I was going to be here.
So you just decide.
The only thing you'd be meeting for is this one $10,000 invoice?
I don't think we... No, we have all the accounts payable next week, but this one $10,000 invoice will be approved in that, and so far I have advised that we will hold that until that payment until you all approve the account.
So what would the consequences be of waiting one more week? Interest?
Not necessarily.
Because you're going to send the check's going to go out, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'll hold the check until you guys approve it, unless you want to go ahead and release it when I approve accounts payable, on Wednesday this week.
We're not going to deny it.
Yeah, that's
okay. I'll go ahead and have it released when I sign off on accounts payable.
And then I'll let you know by the end of the day today whether or not I'm going to be here on Monday.
Yeah, that office does have currently a huge. Right now, there's one line item. Budget of $47,000 that there has been no expenditures in, and that's for bank charges. I'm assuming that the reason there
that's because we haven't balanced the bank statement for
I hope
years.
Not, but there has been discussion from that department head, that elected official, that with all the funds that we have deposited in our checking account banks, that she was trying to get us no fees, no charges.
I remember that conversation from 2 years ago. She was
so she thinks that she got a $47,000 savings from the banks?
That's what I'm seeing in her budget. She hasn't responded to my email.
She hadn't booked it.
There's another that gives her another $20,000 to go on potential legal fees.
She hadn't booked it.
So anyway, there is a positive balance in her budget, but that's something that we'll watch throughout the year, and if it supplementals needed, then we'll bring one forward.
But the bottom line is you're hearing direction to go ahead and release that check, and we'll approve it in accounts payable either next Monday or the following Tuesday. Great.
So are we going to ask for the $443 back?
We can. I will.
We will. Yeah. Shall.
I will.
Yes.
Okay. Could you just short pay the check with that amount?
No, then we'll get charged interest on that.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll over-confuse them. Their attorneys.
Well, they could use it as a credit for future legal charges.
I'll ask that question before I sign off on it. I don't know that I'll have an answer before I sign off on this statement.
Were you off?
Yeah, I was off. So, anyhow, so... So we don't have any accounts payable for today. Items of note from yesterday, we met with the county manager, had a legal update. Deputy County Manager came up with the individuals from Slate Communication, and we adopted a wonderful logo for the new logo for our county. And we had a human services update, a building department update, and a planning department update. So...
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve consent agenda items A, B, and C.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Didn't know that. The first deal that went south that we had on the Klein property, which is still available again, which we'd be willing to maybe even make a trade if the county had something they wanted to trade at an equal value.
I've got a lot for you in Yampa, the Royal Hotel property, and I think we can cut that deal today, Bobby.
We'll talk about it. But that first under contract that we had at the full price of the $995,000 from a national New York Stock Exchange traded company that walked away after 5 months because of their dealings with the planning department, and along the lines of not wanting any cars visible from Highway 40, right across the street is Steamboat Motors, and there's 200 cars sitting on their lot right now that are very visible from Highway 40. And
built prior to the adoption of design guidelines.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
But that's what they'll tell you.
That's what they did tell the potential purchaser, and of course they also wanted at least a 26-foot building, and that particular company only builds one-story buildings, which would have been, by the way, a significant sales tax revenue.
Wait a minute. You mean to tell me that you can't build a one-story building on that property? You have to build something that's 26 foot high?
That's what the planning department told O'Reilly Automobile.
No kidding. That's odd. Does that Klein property include that old house that's right there?
It does.
Okay.
And so I guess that's why I made the public comment, mostly because it's irritating me. And maybe O'Reilly, who has their own in-house legal counsel, of course, and it's out of state, and maybe they could have approached it a little differently. But on the other hand, I think they felt they hit so many roadblocks. And their comments to me through their paralegal was, we've never dealt with any planning department in all the places where we have over 4,000 stores, adding 50 at any given time, that was as difficult to work with. Now, that's what I was told, and I don't believe that's information I can't continue on. She wouldn't give me any details. Initially, she said, well, this particular situation is not a deal killer. But then all of a sudden, it was a dead deal. And the seller, who is looking at a retirement program from that piece of land, who's ready to retire, he's even older than Doug. And
she's an old dude.
Anyway, she just can't believe that the planning department won't take into consideration that it's her land. But we won't go into all the rules and regulations, and you all know that anyway. But they have, in fact, through a lot of these new rules and regulations, made it more difficult. It appears to me they would allow a comparable 45-unit affordable housing apartment residential building such as was built at Elk River Road. And I think that they would allow the zoning change and allow the building of that there, as long as the parking was hidden. And that could be done.
So do you go to the Yampa Valley Housing Authority and tell them it's available?
We have.
Okay.
And my dad, Doug, is still...
It's still part of the scenario.
And so they are looking at another site that they... Well, they're looking at David O'Neill. Is that his last name?
David O'Neill.
Yeah,
that's just one of three that we're...
That's one that's pretty high up, I guess, on their list of potentials, that he would be donating 2 or 3 acres or something like that.
As part of the rent grade.
Yeah, I'm aware of his name.
By the way, I think they're asking him for $600,000 for impact fee on the...
Downhill drive downhill intersection? Drive,
yes.
Yeah, gotta love it, man.
Anyway, am I off base thinking that they're trying to control maybe too stringently things that would be of value to our county that would maybe even bring in affordable housing, which everybody yells we need affordable housing?
You're not going to find disagreement from me. It was one of the reasons I ran for city council 10 years ago.
Yep, and I know that. So, anyway,
I just wanted to come up and say hi this morning. You're counting down yet?
Counting down.
Well, what is it, less than 2 years and you're retirement eligible?
No, I turned, I turned 67.
You're not dead.
He has to receive our permission.
But he's also just a kid, I know that.
Okay. Thank you for asking.
Thank you for letting me vent a little bit here this morning, too.
Have a good day.
Thanks, Bob.
I thought he was talking about a different countdown. So.
What else?
We have a Royal Hotel site out there, and you have to take a look at it. It's perfect for a commercial opportunity.
Well, my senator doesn't want to develop it, but I guess I just have to find somebody that does, and we can do a trade that way somehow. Right,
you bet. So. We've worked something out.
I work on
that. There might not be comparable values. I'm not sure.
Well, okay. Thank you.
1031 exchange, yeah.
We have a 1055 with Todd.
Come on up, Todd. Morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
So what do we got?
We got the IGA to provide the town of Hayden with building department services with an effective date of Monday, July 23rd, 2018. Kind of moving at the pace.
Why are you waiting to the last minute?
Handshakes aren't good enough seeing these legal documents.
Effective date of what?
Monday, July 23rd.
It's like a week and a half in all fairness.
Are Stephanie and Sonia coming on the 23rd or 24th? 24th. Okay. I don't have any questions.
I'm good.
All right. I guess I'll make a motion here Mr. Chairman, I would move that we approve the IGA agreement between the town of Hayden and the Rout County that will allow the Rout County Regional Building Department to provide the town of Hayden with building department services.
Second.
Any discussion? I guess I'd thank you. Todd, you and the new town manager at Hayden to working out that deal and moving forward on this.
All right.
Happy
thank
to
you.
Good with that.
Yeah.
It's
did we
a
vote?
Good deal for all of us.
Did we vote?
No, not yet.
Oh, okay.
That was discussion. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Thank you.
Start in on the agenda. We have consideration, motion to approve and signature by the chairman of the Rock County Board of Health to approve updates to the MOU for continued designation of Northwest Colorado Health as the provider of public health services within Rapp County on behalf of the Board of Health. These are just really housekeeping items on the existing MOU. And we also put in, as far as the term, rather than, you know, there was no review period, we thought it would be good to put in here that we're gonna review this every 5 years to coincide with the master contract. Just so we don't end up with an out-of-date document, but also it's probably not something we need to take a look at every year. So I have the new MOU that was reviewed by the attorneys, so that's ready for signature.
So, Mr. Chair, I move that we approve and authorize your signature as the chairman of the Rapp County Board of Health to sign the MOU for the continued designation of Northwest Colorado Health as a provider of public health services within Rout County on behalf of the Board of Health.
Second.
So just an item of note, Tegan. So in the past, we should be, and I don't know that we have, but we need, we recessed as the Board of County Commissioners, and then we're coming back into session as the Board of Health. And so just so you get that in there and rest. So any other discussion on the motion? Was that right?
Yes.
Yep.
All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 And then one other item. Carrie and I were having a conversation about our medical officer, who is Brian Harrington, and about that process. And I wasn't sure And so I was able to find the memorandum of understanding designating Ryan Harrington as the chief medical officer. This was from 2007 and is also out of date. And so I'm in the process and working with the county attorneys and Northwest Colorado Health to get this MOU up to date also. And I think that we should probably put in a similar term every 5 years to coincide with the master contract. That expires in 2022.
Is that so that's just future agenda?
Sorry?
That'll be on a future agenda?
That's right.
Okay.
And just it's just FYI for you guys that we're also looking at that and getting all these things up to date. And that's it for housekeeping.
Sounds good.
So, we have some exciting news. The State Board of Health has announced that they are going to come for a visit to Rapp County, and they are going to bring 9 members of their board and then also potentially the executive director of CDP, the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. So September 19th, they would like...
Who is that now?
Dr. Larry Bull.
Dr. Larry Bull.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's September 19th?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That wasn't what I was thinking of.
So if anyone is available, they'll be actually at the courthouse from 9 to 10 and would love to visit with anyone who's available. So I let them know that it may or may not work, but they will be over here to visit.
Right, and I sent out an email
maybe I already
explaining seen. All that.
What was the day again?
September 19th.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that they would like to review with anyone they're meeting with is the strategic plan for the state. They have been formulating their strategic plan, and they want to make sure that all of the sites that they visit are aware of where they're at and the work that they're doing and moving forward. So,
right.
Just throw that out there.
And then, as far as our process goes, I think we would have to have a special meeting held on Wednesday if all 3 commissioners were going to attend. Or
we have a 1 o'clock budget meeting that day, according to my calendar.
Or one of you can attend. Less formal, so it's up to
I got like 4 meetings that day.
I can
She's got an AG&C meeting that day. They cancel it in Oak Creek?
I don't know. I'll have to look. No. Because I thought I could leave the meeting early and be back to our budget hearings because we start at 9.
And we do
see what AG&C has on the agenda.
And I'm
actually just approving minutes and going over the financials, which is often what we do for the first hour. I'm happy to attend that and then buzz down there.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep. Let me know and we'll set that up.
Okay. Yeah, I've met with Dr. Wolf before. I always appreciate the opportunity to meet with him.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. And then we also have Scott and I will be at a zoonosis training. We have CDPHE coming.
And Heather as well.
We'll be coming to do a training for staff. We have actually some folks coming from surrounding counties that are also going to attend from the public health departments to learn about zoonosis, about rabies, about animal-human transmission, all of that. So we're doing that at 2 to 4 at the Rapp County Justice Center. So it's a nice opportunity not only for the training, but then also for networking with other communities and with each other. So did you
want
to say anything about that?
Well, we have people coming from Rio Blanco County. Julie...
Drake.
I was going to say Julie Redmond, but... she is coming with a few people, and so like Harry was saying, it's a good networking opportunity, and it's something, you know, we get some weird things that happen in our department sometimes. People worried about bat bites, and we occasionally have to package up bats and send them off to the state lab, and people worry about other animal bites, dog bites, and so it'll be good to talk to the state and make sure that we're all on the same page as far as the process and communication links and things like that.
And extra points for anyone that can use zoonosis in a social conversation in the next week.
I didn't
know that word until just now.
What is it? What's the word?
Zoonosis. Come on, you're a rancher. You probably use that on a daily basis.
I'm sure I do. Yeah, the rabies thing, though, I mean, that was a crazy thing on the Front Range. What, they have 20 kids that brought in some pet, found some pet? Just shoot the damn thing. Get over it.
Oh, wait, let me get that on the record.
Jeez. Then we got 20 people going through X, or down through, wow.
Luckily, we don't see it as it's not as common up here.
But it does happen, and we're going to be educated.
Right, and we'll be ready.
We'll be ready.
Yeah.
Speaking of readiness, emergency preparedness.
We
brought Jim to give an update of the emergency preparedness work that we've been doing.
We've known each other for a long time and been in this field for a while. All right, so part of the agenda was coordination between Rock County and Northwest Colorado Health. And a lot of the coordination started out when Mo started. I reached out almost immediately last March, I think it was, and started the process of what does public health do in terms of emergency preparedness. As you probably know, it's one of the seven core services that have to happen with local public health. On that disk, I actually gave him a jump drive with all of our emergency plans. So we started sharing the plans that I created, the plans that have been out for a long time. We also have been very integrated and engaged in county process of developing the continuity of operations plan, which is going through right now. As you know, Carrie and I have been in that group for a little bit. EMS Advisory Council. Had a seat on that council for quite a few years, ever since I was a firefighter and now. So Mo has been attending that, so we have a voice on protocols, procedures, and so on. So we've been involved in that quite a bit. The MAC Advisory Council, which is a multi-agency coordinating group. Bob Struble, actually, this goes back to Chuck Vail, wanted to start it. We never really were able to get going. So Bob Struble wanted to do it also, but now we're actually engaged in this process, which brings in a lot of partners throughout the county that are not necessarily county staff, but NGOs, NGAs, and so on, part of the process. And then again, just the sharing plans and integrating our plan into the county plan to make sure that they make sense together. So that's been part of the process. In terms of training, I just wanted to report that Carrie now is, as Director of Public Health, completely compliant with the state. There are requirements, and she's taken all of the training in terms of incident command and also the National Incident Management System. So she's completed a lot of that.
Wow, that's a lot of
it's a lot of training.
Hours, huh?
To be honest with you, we're really blessed to have her. She's been incredibly engaged in the process of emergency preparedness. So she's taken ICS 100, 200, 300, and 700. She's also taken the EPR emergency preparedness course online. So, you know, hats off to her for doing that. Other trainings, we've been doing a lot of trainings with staff, specifically public health staff. Don't have to talk about wildland fire in terms of preparation. There's a lot of it, but a lot of it is dealing with our own internal staff to make sure that they are ready. Any of that, we were actually activated to help out. So I've done a lot of trainings with shelter in place, preparing emergency bags and go bags in the unlikely event they had to go to a shelter or whatever else. So we've done a lot of that. Wildland fire, a lot of trainings, and I've been working with a lot of community groups, including politics aside, our undocumented population. Garrett Wiggins and I have had meetings, so has Doug and I, to reach out to that community just to see if we can get them a little more proactive in signing up for emergency alerts with the county. It's a while to build that trust.
That's what Jason Nettles reported to us.
Exactly. Yeah.
Have you gotten, do you work with Sheila Henderson, Community Integrata?
Yep. Been working with them, with the Northwest Community, Independent Community. I can't remember exactly what their groups.
Center for
Horizons also. Had a variety of meetings with these folks to get them signed up because, you know, at the end of the day, if there's a wildland fire or if there's a flood on the amp or whatever, we don't care really what their status is. We just want to make sure that we can get them out of harm's way. So we've been working on that quite a bit. And then the last is specifically the culture. We've been working. Carrie has really kind of led the charge in terms of public health preparedness and the staff. There's, what, 50 or 60 staff now in that department. And we've always had an agency call tree for the leadership group and myself, but now we're finally down to every layer of public health in that department. So back in May, we had an actual exercise internally. We called all staff, gave them a certain amount of time to respond let us know whether they would be available to respond and report to their own offices in Moffitt or here and around. And we had 83% compliance, which met the state litmus for 80%. So right off the bat, we were doing really well with it. In another week, on the 18th, we're going to have another drill, but that will include all of our external partners. So environmental health, emergency management, and so on. So we're going to continue to do this about quarterly, just to make sure that we, first of all, have an accurate contact list with all the staff to see what their availability is and to test that tree. So that's also...
Which agency is holding that technology in their possession? Is that Route County Communications, or do you guys have it in your offices?
We do this internally.
Okay.
And we could create, and it's a good question, Carrie, because I'm part of the group, ESF group, that is part of Everbridge, who's one of those 15 emergency support functions. So I would get an alert almost immediately from Jason or from Mo or whoever else. We are doing it internally, but as far as I understand, with Jason, we could actually create our own internal group.
That sounds like what was explained to us.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's so many more options with Everbridge than there ever was with Code Red.
Right.
Much better system, expandable, just the best there is. So those are some of the things that we're doing.
Are you still engaging with the school districts?
Yeah. It's been a tough nut to crack. I would sure love to see... Tim is referring to the fact that we had a Rapid County School and Safety Task Force many years ago. Tim was on it, I was on it. I do my best. It's tough enough to crack in terms of leadership and the superintendent and how engaged they are in the system. As you know, there is a week-long training and exercise at high school. I'll be an evaluator for the final wrap-up exercise on Friday here. Because of my background, I'm pretty comfortable with evaluating law enforcement and so on. But I'd like to see a more consistent engagement with other folks and other schools.
Yeah.
Because every district is important in the county, in my mind. And this is really specific.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, you'll hear the same thing. I mean, they're already stretched to the limit of the resources and the time they have available.
As you remember, Nancy Stahopiak led the charge on that one. I'm not sure who would run the point on this, but I think if there ever was a time where we need to look at that group or some, you know, hybrid of that group, I think it's important.
Yeah, and I know that a couple of years ago, the sheriff was engaging directly with the school districts, doing some training.
And, you know, there have been attempts with a cooperative Steamboat PD, Hayden PD, and Rapid County SO, to have an interagency special weapons and tactics group, and it comes and goes, depending on leadership and engagement. But you're right, there's just rights of them. But I think it's something we need to address.
We'll try to have a couple of informal conversations. I mean, we have the leadership at both Oak Creek and
we all of them. And then also, even those charter schools that are part of Lake Stevo,
right,
North Route, and so on, they all need to at least be invited to the table because they all have the same concerns.
Okay.
And our sheriff's office and city of Seymour Springs Police hopefully are going to have a whole new level of communication collaboration once their roommates out there.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, nothing but good will come of that. That's all I have.
All right.
We have a new grant that was started July 1st with Westfall Rural Health and the Public Health Department, and it's for tobacco work, to work with prevention and outreach on tobacco prevention. So you might hear some murmurs about that. One of the things that they're starting with is a community profile. So really looking at the community and gathering data as far as what is the usage. You know, what I was in a meeting with Brad Meeks the other day, and he was saying vaping is really the concern that he has with the school district. But there's all kinds of tobacco usage that they're going to be looking at. So taking a look at the data, doing interviews, partnering with Grand Futures. Familiar with Grand Futures with the tobacco work, so just wanted to kind of give you a heads up on that. We're going to be doing that.
Is it all ages?
It's primarily we're focusing on youth, but
okay.
Grand Futures does all ages. I think they're doing all ages. Mm-hmm. One of the other things we're really trying to look at, as Jim mentioned before, is outreach to the non-English speaking communities as well with tobacco. So we have several bilingual providers that are going to be part of the community profile and looking at the usage of non-English speaking residents as well.
So is that just in Broward County or is it in Moffitt?
No, it's Moffitt as well. And then Jackson and Grand County Public Health is doing the tobacco work as well. So. And which ties in a little bit to CHAPS. I know you're familiar with the CHAPS project. I just wanted to give you an update on that. So one of the steering committee's focus areas was mental health, because I think at community-wide, whether it's because we are partnering with Moffitt and Jackson County with CHAPS project, one of their concerns was about mental health and then also physical safety of children who live in poverty. And so we're in the process right now of data collection for that. So we actually have a student from UNC who's with us this summer who's collecting a bunch of data to really look at pockets and gaps throughout the communities and see, you know, if there's mental health needs. The ask is, after we go through this CHAPS project, CPHA has told us that we can go back with a funding request to support some of those areas where we identify as communities that we need some support. So hopefully, after we gather all this data and we put it all together and package together and work as communities together, we'll be able to have the opportunity to have some support for the services that are identified as needs in those communities. So that's the CHAPS update.
So that's separate from communities that care?
It is a separate, separate funding stream for one, but then additionally, Communities That Care is participating in this. We've tried to pull together as many people as we can from various organizations for the steering committee to make sure that whatever one community is doing out of these agencies is being collaborative with it. And then as far as seasonal topics, you might have seen in the CBO today the PSAs or the news about the West Nile virus updates, the rabies updates. We're really trying to get the information out into the newspaper about anything that pertains to our community and any risks that are seasonal that are happening right now. So,
well, the West Nile's been pretty quiet recently, has it not? I mean, we really...
Yeah.
I mean, other than the rabies one on the Front Range, I don't know that much of that going on either. But
yeah, I think we were just talking about the mosquitoes being really bad this year, though.
Yes.
Yeah, they're not.
Tell you what, it's kind of 6 or 7 o'clock. Sit on the deck, the rabbit's great.
Plus, Moffitt County's not spraying anymore, so they're all blowing this way.
That's what we mean by a filled wall.
And that'll do.
That'll do it.
And then as far as opioids, I know that you were on the panel for the Healthier Colorado, which we think several people from Northwestern Health came to. And I just kind of wanted to give you an update as far as from a public health standpoint about opioids. We really are deferring to our community partners that are the subject matter experts about opioids. You know, the RxCEP task force, the folks working with the physicians, those groups. But what we are doing is working on the upstream of really trying to get into the schools and work through youth resiliency and some of our programs that we have in place to help give kids coping skills from a young age in hopes that that will translate then to resiliency throughout their life. So that's kind of our positioning. I don't know if you want to say any more about that.
I think the only thing I would add is that there's a lot of funding right now coming down from the federal government for enhanced behavior health and substance abuse support. So we have two or three pretty substantial grants out right now to apply to increase our behavioral health capacity within our community health center clinics, and also to expand telepsychiatry services, which we've been doing for about a year and a half. So
you guys are providing that, or MindSprings?
We're contracting with MindSprings for that. We've done that for about a year now, and we're looking to expand it. So it's been great. No, but that leads in really nicely to our video and our follow-up conversation on self-rub dental. So I want to show a video that was presented by the National Association of Community Health Centers for just kind of the history of how FQHCs got started, the funding streams, and the benefits to the communities that...
I already watched this.
Oh, good.
When it came out the first time.
Yeah. Oh, good. Oh, okay.
I actually remember this.
Oh, good. Good.
1964.
It was right, after JFK's assassination. This was his first State of the Union message.
Do you want me to start?
50 years ago, as a modest social experiment during America's war on poverty, the goal, to bring doctors and primary and preventative health services into poor urban and rural communities, places where health needs were neglected and ignored by mainstream medicine. A revolutionary partnership was created, bringing together for the first time reform-minded physicians, nurses, local community leaders, and the federal government to build a new type of community-based health care. It would serve all people, no matter who they were, where they lived, regardless of income or insurance status. And it would empower and give voice to people living and working in those communities to direct how health care was to be delivered. That small investment 5 decades ago has saved countless lives and strengthened thousands of communities. Today, community health centers stand as the largest and most successful primary care system in America. Through their shared mission, they provide high-quality, cost-effective services, including medical, dental, behavioral, pharmacy, and vision care. Community health centers are a vital health safety net for more than 23 million Americans, including 7 million children and over 260,000 veterans. In over 9,200 communities, they are opening the doors of health care, giving more people the chance for healthier and stronger lives. Community health centers go beyond the traditional four walls of medicine to break down barriers that often keep people from getting the care they need, such as lack of transportation, language and cultural differences, income, and insurance status. Health centers also work in partnership with others in the public and private sectors, developing local strategies to address the root causes of poor health, such as nutrition and food insecurity, homelessness, environmental conditions, and unemployment. Community health centers are a leading model in primary care practice, helping to transform healthcare delivery in America to enhance quality and reduce costs. Years of research shows health centers are more accessible than other providers to patients who are new, uninsured, or have Medicaid. Health center patient outcomes are as good as or better than those of other primary care providers, even though health center patients are challenged with more complex health needs. Health center care reduces mortality, health disparities, and risk of low birth weight. Community health centers have broad support in the public and private sectors because they produce value, not only for their patients and local communities, but also for governments at all levels and the American taxpayer. When compared to other healthcare providers, health centers produce over $1,200 in savings per patient per year, and health centers generate $24 billion a year in savings across the entire healthcare system. Their patients are less likely to visit emergency departments for non-emergency care, and hospital stays are lessened or even prevented because health centers focus on prevention, patient education, and effective management of chronic and costly diseases. But health centers are more than just healthcare providers. They serve as economic engines in some of the nation's most resource-disadvantaged rural and urban communities, stimulating job and small business growth, and purchasing goods and services. Collectively, health centers generate an estimated $26.5 billion in economic activity in local communities. Nationwide, health centers employ over 160,000 full-time doctors, nurses, and other healthcare professionals and support staff, and that includes our nation's veterans. They are often one of the largest providers of jobs and job training in their communities. As America's need for primary care doctors, nurses, and other healthcare workers continues to grow, teaching health centers play an important role in ensuring an adequate workforce for the future. And as frontline providers, health centers aid in protecting our communities and overall public health in times of widespread healthcare emergencies and natural disasters. Since their early beginnings, community health centers have been called on to do more and more, serving greater needs, and they have always answered that call, making people healthier, strengthening communities, and producing value. Yet today, 62 million Americans still live in areas with little or no access to doctors or health services. So the question is, will community health centers be needed in the future? The answer is yes. Imagine an America without them. America's Health Centers. Value in healthcare today and tomorrow.
So it's just a really nice overview of community health centers, how they got started, and the ongoing benefit that they provide to the communities that they serve. And so this leads a little bit into a South Route, is why does this work for us? Is because it's a more comprehensive model. There we have access to additional funding sources, higher Medicaid reimbursements, and just the breadth and depth of services that we're able to bring to behavioral health to that clinic that makes it advantageous for us to be part of the self-run community providing these services. We've had 10 days of clinic down there and seen 53 patients over that period.
For behavioral health?
No, for dental.
Oh.
For dental.
Or just, I knew things were rough.
Well, and actually,
is that with Dr. Hurley who just
came Dr. Hurley us? Just started back okay. last on the 2nd, so he's only been back 2 days at this point.
Okay.
So the other services have been provided by the Registered Dental Hygiene Institute on Thursdays only at this point. But we are hoping to add behavioral health services in September to some of these grants that we have out pending, at least starting one day a week. So that would be great.
So South Route still doesn't really have an opportunity to be a federally qualified health center?
No, typically when you apply for federally health FQHCs, they look to see who's already in the service area. So I think the expectation is more that we would reach out and how do we partner with South Route to get the services down there versus them applying to become their own FQHC.
So you guys are a federally qualified health center?
We are, yes. We have been since 2008 in Moffitt County, and then in 2013 we started in Rock County. So yeah, we are one of 20 FQHCs in the state of Colorado.
And the advantage is that you get higher reimbursement rates.
We get access to higher reimbursement for Medicaid for some for programs. We also have what's called the base funding. So we get base funding from the federal government to serve low-income, uninsured populations, so that it helps to cover the difference in the cost versus what we get paid for it. The other thing that's nice is we have access to malpractice insurance, which is a huge expense for providers. We get it through the federal government as part of that program. And then we also have access to loan repayment, which is really nice for practitioners coming out of school.
So by virtue of you reaching out to the South Route Medical Center, can you guys take advantage of those higher reimbursement rates while providing the services in the South Route Medical Center?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, so what you have to do is, for us to be able to go to South Robbins, we have to add it as one of our sites. And we did that back in March or April of this year. But anyway, so it's an approved site under our scope. And so now the benefits that we have extend down to South Route for the dental at this point, and then the behavioral health, hopefully starting in September.
And then I couldn't tell when Dr. Hurley came in a public comment. Is South Route running out of space and they're looking for more space, or are they going to be doing okay, especially when they have add mental health?
I think they'll be doing okay. We're working with Ken right now on how we creatively use that space so that the days that we would do behavioral health services are days that there's room availability. So it's definitely, a conversation on how do we creatively use and make the most of the space that they have down there.
Whether they can afford us anymore either.
Yeah. But what about Colorado Northwest Health?
You know, we are space challenged also. I mean, okay. But we're creative in how we're, we have access to other facilities that we can use, and how do we look at what we have and minutiae around. So part of our strategic planning process that we're going to start in the next month or so, and have our new strategic plan done by the end of this year is facilities is definitely a discussion.
So if you're, for the purposes of providing behavioral health services, theoretically, you guys could lease some less expensive space in the Oak Creek area, or?
You know, the benefit of having it co-located is if somebody's in the dental chair and they have an issue where they present with a crisis or something, to have that behavioral health right there. I mean, that's really the model of community health centers, is that it's integrated and, you know, you have access to all of those medical, dental, behavioral health all within one spot.
So, and, you know, I mean, I'm sure Kelly's told you this, but we did a space needs analysis for our human services department probably 3 years ago. And after we're finished with the CLEP, the combined law enforcement facility between Brown County and City of Seymour Springs, you know, probably tackling her department is next. And so, I mean, I see some similarities between you guys, and so we should make sure that we're always talking.
We're not going to make you move back into that building over there.
Sorry, my career in that building over there.
No, we don't want to make anyone move into that building over there. But let's just make sure that we're communicating. I mean, we've definitely got high praise from DOLA, the city and the county, by working together to do something, and I think that's, you know, what we need to do community-wide with our schools and our town partners and everything. It's conversations about.
Facility process last year was more of an assessment of what we had, and we had a group out of the Front Range do it, and they did some phenomenal projects, kind of right, you know, where the Purina plant Dahlia Street project.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of stuff where they have just the child care, they have workforce centers. I mean, they just have one-stop shopping for people that really need access to them. I mean, it's just, there's some really neat models out there.
Okay.
Is there anything that you would like for us to report on next night that we didn't report on or you're interested in? Or I just would like it to be meaningful for you.
You know, I guess I'm still at least a little bit frustrated with communities that care and how that process originally rolled out and where it may or may not be headed. I guess I'd like to hear more about what's going on with that.
Okay.
Are we sending them money?
I think you guys are giving a good update.
No,
new format.
But the state certainly is providing a significant amount of funding for that project.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, out of protocol, there was one thing I wanted to mention. If we can go back to emergency preparedness. It was in my bullet points, but I overlooked it. And that is, once a year, we're required by state to do a full inventory of all of our emergency supplies and so on. The reason this came up was looking at that video. Quite a few fires I've worked in the last 6 to 8 weeks, and I was in front of helping down in La Plata County with the 416 fire. And one of the questions the county commissioners came up with at that time, they were really looking at just ramping up shelters, and of course the air quality was absolutely horrendous, was what do we have in stock? What do we have for masks and personal protective gear and all those for the populations at risk that may have chronic respiratory issues and so on. So that's what kind of reminded me of the fact that I'm in the process of looking at all that we have in terms of N95 masks and surgical masks and so on, which you see people using quite a bit in an area like this if we ever had a really major fire with really poor air quality. So, you know, I can tell you that we're approximately right now in Rapid County, Public Health has 2,800 of those masks. In Moffitt County, we have about 2,500, but I'll get you an absolute accurate number. I'll share that with Scott with Noah also, so they have that besides the fact. Remember Carrie last summer?
I was just going to say, I went out to the inventory out by the arm. That was one of the things.
6,000 masks.
So hopefully Mo gave you his inventory after he was done counting disposing.
We got rid of a lot of old stuff for sure.
But yeah.
The masks are still in quality. And they were actually distributing those masks in Durango and in Silverton at like City Market and Safeway and all that to the population. Just take the mask and, you know, utilize it for the next few days. Obviously, we're a month later and they're still having issues, but it's good to know those types of resources. And so I'll be sharing that with all of you.
Birth rates holding steady?
Yes, they are. We the only thing that you might be interested in is that the state raised the first certificate cost. And so I think it's, I can't remember how much they raised it by, but just a little bit. So it is costing people more to get their first certificate and support their babies now than it did. So it changed.
I didn't have any questions, comments.
We are going to be doing a press release probably sometime in the next week just about our partnership with South Rock, so you'll see something in the paper about that.
Sounds like a positive thing.
I think it's just going to continue.
If you can
to
get Medicare or Medicaid rates to go up, that's always going to
happen. Well, that providing behavioral health services is out of
the Yeah.
I might need to avail myself.
So are these people that can't drive a steamboat, or that they
for behavioral health?
Oh, or just the South Rock Medical Center. I've always.
I mean, it's just great that there's a medical center there for just, you know, even full. I mean, they have a lot of full pay customers that come in and utilize the services there. It's not all just Medicaid, Medicare. So
I was on the Stagecoach area every time I drive by the parking lot's full.
Yeah. I think, you know, in retrospect, the mistake that was made, they didn't build a bigger building when they had the opportunity to. And yeah. The way they went about building, you know, rebuilding what was there was questionable, but you know, stuff, that's
we're lucky. Under the bridge. We're lucky that it got done.
Yeah. We're lucky that we didn't have to jump in.
And we didn't have to finish it,
But yeah, I think we're all excited that, that's standing up in a good way.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Thank you very much.
More will come on that too, so that's great.
Very good.
Thank you,
all for coming in.
Please let us know if you think of something, you know, that you would like to discuss during these quarterly meetings, and we'll continue to meet on a monthly basis, and also have our prep meeting with Mo and Kelly, and so that communication and coordination, I think, has gotten a lot better, and we'll continue to do that. Thanks.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
You may be aware that they have changed the deduction limit from $12,000 up to $24,000. And so we believe as a nonprofit community that that's going to affect us in some capacity. We believe that people are still going to give because it's the right thing to do and that's what they want to do. But it will affect some people and how much they give, and if they give.
It can't help.
Say that again. Again, I haven't been following it because it really isn't important to me right now. So
There's a number of things that we're concerned about, but one of the things in the new tax bill is that
the deductibility of contributions.
Right. So it used to be a $12,000 limit, and then they're raising that now to $24,000. So they're basically doubling it.
What's the problem with that?
Well, the problem is that somebody has to get
people to give more.
Yeah.
No, because if I was subject to the $12,000, anything that I give above the $12,000 would be deductible. Now it's anything I give above $24,000.
Oh, I see what you're saying. That was the floor. Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah. So we believe that that's going to.
That's not the way it was.
No. It's not.
You had to
get an automatic.
You didn't have to give $12,000 to deduct it.
No.
You could give $1,000 to deduct it.
You get an You've always had an automatic $12,000
personal exemption.
Right.
Okay. It's not nothing to do with contributions.
So what is your point?
If it doubles the personal, then we feel like people may or may not
give. Oh, because they don't need to give because they already got a double.
Right. They've already.
Okay.
Right.
You know, so
it's pretty straightforward.
I don't know if I agree with that because people may have more money in their pocket, so maybe it could increase giving. I mean, you could look at it two different ways.
We're hopeful, but we believe that.
I don't think that's the way it's going to work. I think, I mean, myself included, a lot of the times that I'm doing charitable contributions, I'm looking for the tax deduction, and it will limit my giving.
I guess I have a different perspective.
I've never qualified for a charitable contribution in my life.
I just know from running my husband's payroll,
you gotta have to have
people are getting more in their paychecks.
Mortgage income, mortgage expense as well to go
to get over the
$12,000.
Yeah, well, I've gotten over it plenty easy.
No, I've never.
Okay,
I've never.
We went down a rabbit hole right
here. I need to understand what you meant.
Yeah,
so that's fine.
Well, I'm just saying that you know, the nonprofit community nationwide as well as locally are concerned about this and how is it going to affect the giving. We don't know. So we want to be proactive about it. And one of the things that the Rural Philanthropy Days, RPD, interim committee, which I'm on, with a number of other nonprofit executives in the five-county area, we decided that what we wanted to work on in the two-year interim before the next RPD comes around to us is advocacy and really look at how we can increase the visibility of nonprofits and the impact that they do in the communities. And so we came up with a vision that we want a community culture that elevates the visibility, value, and impact of the Northwest Colorado Nonprofit Network. And they had a little bit of extra money left over from the last Rural Philanthropy Days, which was last September. And we will carry over about 10 grand for the next one that is going to happen in 4 years. And so we are hiring a marketing consultant. It's Julia Hibbard from Good & Partners down in Summit County to come up and do some interviewing. And she'll probably interview some of you because we want your input as well as business input and regular community input on how they view nonprofits and so forth and so on, so that we can put together some kind of a marketing plan and PR plan that we can use throughout the five-county region to elevate the idea of nonprofits and the impact of what we do in the communities.
I know you're looking at something much bigger, but I have really appreciated the effort where you guys have sent someone to public comment at City Council, taking turns rotating through the nonprofits just to thank them and give them a five-minute education on what the organization is doing.
And a story.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really important. We have started that up again, so we did that last year, and so HRC, just going down to the next thing, is that we have said that's great that the interim committee is going to do it. It's much bigger. You're dealing with people from Moffitt and Grant and Rio and all of that, and environmental and arts and culture and so forth. But HRC, the Human Resource Coalition, has really said we want to be very proactive in what we're doing in the community, and so we have started our advocacy plan, which we hope will feed into the larger five-county plan. We also, the HRC has given some really valuable input into the Early Childhood Education Community Plan. Recently, I was delighted with the impact and input that they gave. It was stuff that we didn't think about before from the early childhood, the Early Childhood Council people, education people on the Early Childhood Council, First Impressions. And there's a council that is made up of community members.
So we're in the middle of this process.
Yeah.
So you're talking about the ad hoc group that's following what the housing group did?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Trying to pattern our look at the needs of the early childhood education community.
What could they possibly think of that you hadn't?
You know, I just was amazed.
For all the organizations
I was just amazed. We did a gallery walk where we put each of the questions up on the wall, and we paired up people in twos and had them go and answer the question, and they couldn't. They had to add to, not duplicate, what was already on there. And it was just a wealth of information and different perspectives, and it was just great. And so we're hoping to do that in the Early Childhood Committee, to do that in a couple of different formats in the community to try to get more input. So HRC's been busy with that and focusing in on our HRC plan that we have done last year and trying to make impact with that. The other thing that I wanted to just make you aware of is a collective impact process that we are doing. And a collective impact is a elevated collaboration model. It's a five-step model, and it has to do with a shared vision and a shared measurements. Those are the two critical components. But you have a backbone organization that handles all the communication with it. You have a designated communication plan. And what makes collective impact different than just a regular collaboration is that it includes everybody that is involved in that issue. So if we were to take, for instance, early childhood education, because it's easy to do an example with that, but it might be mental health or some other human service issue. If you took early childhood education, not only would you have the providers, and you would have the parents, and you would have the businesses, and you would have all the people that are affected by quality early childhood education at the table in some capacity, using the same measurements as to the outcomes of this collective impact that we're doing. And there's many different areas in the country that have done collective impact successfully. One of the oldest has been in Cincinnati area, and I happen to know that through the United Way over there. And so when I called over to United Way Cincinnati, they have been doing it for over 10 years. They have seen a tremendous amount of impact in the collective piece, and really made a difference with high school graduation and school scores and all sorts of things that are very, very measurable. And we got a consultant. We referred to a consultant, and the Craig Sheckman Family Foundation and the Yampa Valley Community Foundation and Rock County United Way got together, and Sarah funded this consultant to come out, and we formed a task force of about 20 different people in the community, mainly businesses and not nonprofits. We specifically did not want nonprofits at the table, because we wanted to see if collective impact would be even feasible in Rock County.
What's your area of interest or your area of influence?
Well, we left it open,
okay,
through this task force process to say, is collective impact, you know, possible in Rock County? And we met four times since last September, and the outcome of that committee, we're waiting for the final report, but the outcome is, yes, we believe that we're very ripe for a collective impact model to use. Now, I would say that Northwest Colorado Community Health Partnership with the task, our task force was a loose collective impact model at one point in time. I don't know if they are currently, but at one point in time, I think they really involved all the players to make an impact on that. And they have moved the needle to an extent with that. So we're at the point now of, you know, Mark and I looked at each other and said, who's going to be the backbone organization? Because the next step is to take a community assessment, what's happening already in our community, who's doing it, how they're doing it, that kind of thing.
How do you guys interface with, like, Northwest Workforce Board, which has a collective grouping of businesses that are talking about things on a more regional level and looking at some industry clusters? And how do you interface with the SSEDC, that's also a collection of big entities and business people? I mean,
right.
When and you talk about this collective impact, you're talking about something bigger than collaboration, but you can't exist in a silo separate from all of these other efforts.
Right. Right. So all of those players at some point in time would be involved in whatever initiative that we would select. But you have to go out into the community and have the community tell you what it is that is so important based on data. And we have some really wonderful data that I want to come back sometime and do and present to you on Route County data that we... one of my donors is a data geek, and little did I know, I sent her on a path, and she came back with all this wonderful information and some new, surprising information, like the demographics of 18 to 35 and and how volatile that is in our community. So we need to find out who's doing what, do an inventory, and we need to go out into the community and find out what issue they want to get behind.
Because you don't want to be a committee in search of a problem, right. Especially if there's someone else trying to solve that problem.
Exactly.
And you can work together. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, so we'll see. Ideally avoid some duplication.
We don't want to duplicate. Right. No.
We already are. Yeah. We know we are. I mean, just
some.
Yeah. I mean, it depends what you're talking about, right? Right. It's been an interesting process to really delve into this collective impact and see, you know, how it can work, can it work in our community. So that's where we're at now.
Have we heard anything about communities that care? Are you engaged with them at all?
Yes. I mean, I have my staff member attend them, and that would be a collective impact model.
Yeah. Okay.
I think.
I'm just curious to see what their impact is or what they've been doing.
Yeah.
I don't really hear much from them anymore.
And how yours differs.
Well,
I mean, there's a tremendous amount of money going into communities that care.
You're not a kid.
Yeah, I know.
From where?
State.
Vicki Clark was a little, concerned about that.
Yeah.
And they got off and a rocky start, then they kind of got restarted.
Yeah.
And then I just haven't heard anything since they got restarted. So, okay. I'll talk to you offline about that sometime.
Okay. That'd be good. Okay, and then finally, I wanted to give you an update of what United Way has been doing. We launched a Women United group, you're invited, Carrie, which is a affinity group of women of United Way. And it's a group of women, anybody is invited. It's a membership group of $100 or more a year. And we are focusing on one of our four impact areas. And right now, they've chosen early childhood education. And when we looked at the DIPL scores, which is an assessment to see how literate kids are going into kindergarten, are they familiar with words? Do they know which way to open up a book? I mean, very simple things. 39% of the kids in Ralph County were not ready for kindergarten in literacy. And that is an aggregate score for the entire county. And that was shocking to us, so we decided that we needed to do something about it. And I had heard about the Dolly Parton Imagination Library. Moffat County has had it for 4 years, 5 years now. A teacher down in South Route had mentioned that to me, that, boy, we need it here. And so we looked into it, and it was a very simple program where it's $25 a year per child to get 12 books delivered to their home each month, two of which a year are bilingual. They're addressed to the child's name. And so
12 books a month?
No, these are a year.
Oh, I think it's 12 a month.
Yeah, one a month.
It's like, wow.
For 12 a year.
Yeah. Have your reading schedule in me.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so it's pretty exciting. Dollywood Foundation is the Dolly Parton's Dollywood Foundation is the one that you connect with. And a way they work it is that you have to be connected with a fundraising organization in the community that's going to take this on. And so United Way decided to take that on with Women United, and we launched it in January of this year to any child who is from birth to five in Rob County is eligible for this program. And it's free to them and their family.
How do you go about identifying the children?
Well, we've been trying very hard. At the when I looked at census last year, it was 1,350 kids from birth to five. And so that was our goal, and we launched it in January. We have over 400 kids signed up already. We've done, it's in the sign-ups are in every single library in the county. We've been to every single preschool, home provider, you name it,
The audience that you're going to have difficulty reaching is probably the audience that needs it the most.
You know, farmers market. I did four on Saturday in a 2-hour period. So we're going to be at the farmer's market, you know, at the First Impressions tent.
But, you know, that's great, but I'm just thinking that by going through the existing preschool facilities, you're reaching the kids that are already enrolled.
Right, but what about the brother and the sister that is younger, you know, and let's get books into there. We're at the hospital. So, and we have bought the first book. The first book is The Little Engine That Could. And the last book is Welcome to Kindergarten. And those are the same every year. And then in between, all the books in between get changed every year by a group of literacy professionals that are nationwide.
Did you send me an invitation to Women United?
I hope so. If not, we're going to. We have a backpacks and bubble event on August 2nd at Rex's, and it's going to be a blast. We're going to stuff backpacks for underprivileged children, office supplies and stuff, or school supplies. So I'll send you an invitation for that. It's a wide range of women, anywhere from 22 on up to 77. I mean, we have all women are invited. It's a fun group. So we are going to be checking those DIPLES assessment scores to see how we can affect that through this literacy program. And so we're working hard to get that out to every child that needs it.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah, and I think we'll be at the fair. That would be another place that I need to go to. So that's what's going on. And we love Amber.
Yeah. Don't rub it in.
Yeah.
We miss Amber.
Yeah. She's awesome.
Get your eyes on anybody else over here? Can we give you a list?
We just need a little bit more money to hire a part-time.
What about Kelly Keith's waiting list for kids trying to get slots? Shouldn't they be in the Imagine Library program?
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They're waiting for their spot, so.
Yeah.
Although we don't really have a waiting list at preschool. The pinch point's infants, you know, so, I mean, that's not a big resource for you by any means.
So what I was saying, I got sidetracked, is at the hospital we buy the, a couple cases of books of the first engine that could. And so when they sign up after they have their baby, they sign up for the Imagination Library and they get the first book right then and there, which is really great.
Okay.
So I have to tell you a story about one of my board members' toddlers. Had already had the book, First Little Engine That Could, you know, because yes you can, right? Remember the story?
Mm-hmm.
And, but he got another one in the mail, because that's always the first one you get. And the mother said he wants to read both of them in a row. So you read one, and then you read another. And she said, when he plays outside of reading time, he says, yes, I can. And I'm thinking, how cute is that? I mean, he's taking that story and making a tape for himself, you know, which I think is great. How is that going to affect him later on in life? Yes, he can.
So you're getting these books in the hands of every, in essence, every newborn.
Yes, yes.
And so if this program goes on for 4 or 5 years, we'll have gotten virtually everybody at that point.
Yeah, except for the people that move in and out. You know, the other cool thing is when we pulled the stats of who we have registered, the 400-plus kids, they're from Taponas, they're from Oak Creek, Yampa, Hayden, North Route, all over Steamboat. I mean, the addresses are, we have every zip code represented.
Good.
So we really, I feel good about that. Yeah, this Women United group is going out there. And along with that, we started a volunteer reading program at Soda Creek with Ann Kuhn. And Women United can sign up for an hour and help kids with reading homework or math homework. And they're loving it. They're loving that connection with the kids.
It'd be really fascinating to see if you actually can make a dent in those numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you move the needle 10%, it's still worth it.
Yeah.
Especially, I would imagine, and you think you already said it, the people that are moving in and out, they're the ones that are dropping through the cracks.
Yeah.
I think you're probably covering probably most of everybody. And,
I mean, I wonder
also.
If the Imagination Library has been going on in the communities, what is the highest goal they've ever been able to achieve? Because, for example, when my daughter started kindergarten, we could not have read more books to her. My second daughter, like, all the time, constantly, and she had to learn letters as a kindergartner, you know, and there were other kindergartners who were reading, and it was a really big self-esteem issue for her, and it wasn't lack of having an enriched home life.
Right.
There's just some kids that don't get reading ready until they're seven. It just isn't going to happen. The brain is maturing in a different way. My understanding, especially if you're growing up in a bilingual home, kids that are bilingual seem like they're a little, you know, left behind in subjects, and then later in life they're caught up, but it's because their brain is absorbing a wider range of information. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you were at 39% of kids that aren't reading ready, what's the max that a community was ever able to get? Because for us to say 100% is an unrealistic goal.
Yeah.
And maybe stressful for the kid that's in kindergarten. You know, they come home, Josie comes home and she says, I can't read.
Reading into kindergarten. You know,
right.
They're just recognizing letters. They're recognizing
right.
which way to hold a book. That kind of,
yeah,
you know,
it's,
some
it's
really elementary thing.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
But the school district's goal is 80%.
Okay.
So, all right. You know, that's our next goal.
So that's good. You have a goal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's measurable.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just thought it was time to pop in and give you an update. And,
we appreciate it.
What was the last thing on emergency preparedness that I missed?
Oh, I didn't have that on this one. I have my radar up on that. Mo has invited me to participate. Other United Ways in Colorado are participate in those emergency preparedness drills and so forth. We have very little capacity because we have two people. Here, I talked with Kelly Keith, and she said, you know, let's work together to see, you know, if we get to a point where we need to have volunteer coordination or something that we could step in and help with. That's what we would do. So Mo sent me what was most recent. I've collected information from United Ways throughout the state. And, you know, I want to get back with Mo to say, you know, and Kelly, here's where we can play a role, particularly when it comes to volunteer coordination. So I just wanted to let you know that was on my radar.
Sounds good.
Yeah, good.
Thank you for coming in.
Thank you. I appreciate the time and to give you an update.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See ya.
Sorry, Dan, that we ate into your time.
Oh, no, it's fine. I think I can be quick.
Okay.
Let's go then.
Okay. So this is approval of a contract between county and Center for Priority Based Budgeting, or Resource X, for the use of priority based budgeting as a budget analysis. It comes with the support of DOLA, so the price tag was $100,000 over 3 years, which the Department of Local Affairs will pay half of. We received grant notice June 4th, and we'll work, once we've got approval on this, we'll work through the DOLA form to make sure that we've dotted all those I's and crossed the T's to make sure that we are eligible for the grant that we expect to get. So the first year would be $20,000 for the county. The next 2 years, years two and three, would be $15,000 each, and a total of $50,000 expenditure for the county, $50,000 expenditure for DOLA. And that's it. I think we've talked in some measure about the value of priority-based budgeting as a tool. Hopefully allows us to get a better sense of what our expenditures are in various program areas, and then to reallocate some of those things to different priorities that reflect things that are adopted either in the strategic plan or priorities of the board.
So will we have some actionable items at the conclusion of year one? Could we start to see some money move from one column to the other?
I hope so. Yeah, okay. I think we will. But what we'll do initially is once we've gotten through the DOLA process, which I would expect to be in August at some point, we'll do a kickoff training with department heads and key staff. And then we'll do essentially some of the costing, sort of look at the program inventory, create those for the various departments, and then also start looking at costing for those programs once we've created the inventory. And so we should be able to then start to see some of the actual costs associated with those. And I would imagine just off that, you'd be able to move some things around and kind of do the, why we spend that much on this, or why don't
we? Don't want to wait till the end of year three.
Right. No, I think it'll be immediate, and it'll just be iterative from there on.
Okay. You guys ready?
Yep.
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve your signature on the agreement between Ralph County and Resource X for 3 years' access to priority-based budgeting software.
Second.
Any discussion? So I guess you'll keep us informed as we move forward here.
Absolutely.
I guess so. We're partly part of the process and not being processed.
I hope you will participate as we go through some of the training, and you know, if you want to, we'll figure out how the software actually works, but if you want to have access to that, we definitely can do that as well.
All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 We'll make sure that the process preserves as well.
Say what?
We'll make sure that the process preserves.
Oh, there you go.
We're statutory.
Good. Go on. Can you go off just a second?
That turn back on here.
Okay. So we're here discussing some housekeeping amendments. It's a two-part discussion. The first part is general housekeeping items, and the second are proposed amendments to our secondary dwelling unit regulations. This discussion item is scheduled next with you all, August 28th, and we scheduled it as a work session and adoption hearing, so to allow for some flexibility. So if you wanted more discussion on specific items, you can pull them off and move forward with the rest of the items. So the first part of the general housekeeping discussion items, on page 9 of your packet is Exhibit A that I put up on the screen just for ease of the discussion. But these are items that Planning Commission, all of the amendments that were proposed were supported. And this would be in the form that you would see them at the adoption hearing. We can go through each item if you'd like. I know it was laid out in your staff packet in the Planning Commission memo. Or if you have specific items that you want to discuss, we can just do it that way, whatever you would prefer.
So we're just eliminating.
I can go through and just summarize.
Let's go through.
Do that?
Yeah.
So the first item has to do with deleting the commuter zone out of our definitions, and also in the table in 4.19, it's no longer applicable since we recently amended our secondary dwelling unit regulations. The purpose of the commuter zone was to allow for secondary dwelling units to be, or people to be eligible to have one located in the commuter zone if you had 5 acres.
Did we ever use it?
Not that since I've been here.
So I don't think we'll miss it then, probably.
There you go. So I guess it's safe to say agree with.
Yeah. I started thinking about it a little bit. One of my pet peeves is the potential of a commuter zone and the nightly rental concept based on traffic. So,
right. But
we'll talk about it. We can have that.
I think the discussion was is that we would be creating winners and losers across the county if we.
Well, and it didn't even include anything
just
with Steamboat, right?
Pardon?
We
it
didn't.
Was right,
no.
Right around.
Right.
Right.
So the other incorporated areas didn't even get a commuter zone. They didn't have a donut.
Yeah, it essentially follows the urban growth boundary. So.
I thought that there were some donuts around.
This came out of the 95 update of the Steamboat Springs plan, and the other municipalities' comp plans were updated since then, and basically they didn't ask for it. Yeah, I think it could have been integrated into that. It's not too late by any means, but
we're getting rid of it.
But because of the broadening, the relaxation of some of the secondary dwelling unit standards that were approved recently, we don't need it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Fine.
So we're not losing anything.
Okay.
It's just duplicative in some ways. It's encompassed in those changes.
Its time has passed.
In my mind. other than getting named, it might not have ever had a time.
The next item has to do with Section 3.4.6, eliminating the word profit out of that Section B, which originally read, under no circumstances shall a variance be granted on the sole basis of personal convenience, profit, or special privilege to the applicant. That word profit really was tying up the Board of Adjustment, and some applicants of, you know, the use of that word. After further discussion, it was suggested to leave profit in and add in the bold there, or cost of development, to be a little more clear of what that language or the intent of each should mean.
You know, without having the word profit even defined in the definitions, it's still up in the air, profit is.
I don't know that you need to define the word profit in the definitions of the zoning regulations. I think the definition of that word is well enough.
Yeah, you know, unless it's capitalized.
Yeah, and I think I mentioned this last time either here at Planning Commission, that it's more or less just, you know, I view it as a heads up for an applicant. You know, because you need the five criteria anyway, and so it's, does it have a place in there?
I guess maybe my question here is, are we going to make it harder for applicants? Because I think that the Board of Adjustment would, if, especially if you meet the five criteria, would be swayed by the fact that an overly burdensome cost to a property owner, right?
In that may fit into criteria number one or number three. If the site constraints are such that you could build it, it would just be expensive because you got to tear down rocks or build a road a mile wide or something. That has its place in the criteria.
Okay. Under these new regulations, could a property owner get relief from the Board of Adjustment under our code for saying, yeah, you'd have to tear down a bunch of rocks or trees and it'd be really expensive if you're forced to?
I don't see that there's any difference between what's proposed and what's existing.
Then why did you guys bring it up?
It clarifies, because the Board of Adjustment has had, you know, a few conversations in the past, you know, I don't know, since I've been here anyway, about what profit means. Because profit's usually the money you make.
Why don't you remove both of them? Why don't you just leave it on the basis of personal convenience or special privilege?
Yeah, or the cost of development. I like
it. Take them all. Both of them.
But I mean, I guess I find myself agreeing with Carrie here. It seems that you're saying under no circumstances shall the board consider, you know, the additional cost of development. But you're saying that there's a way that they can consider it. But I mean, this seems to be a pretty black and white sentence. That the homeowner can come in looking for a variance, and they're going to say, look, I'm going to have to move all these rocks and trees and build this huge retaining wall. And the Board of Variance is going to have to say, well, we don't care. That's your problem. We don't care if it costs you $3 million. You know, that's your problem. We can't consider that.
And we don't want the Board of Adjustment saying things like that.
Right. So, yeah, I'm really struggling with that sentence.
You know, back before I was director, I'd seen many Board of Adjustment cases come through where the Board of Adjustment would make a decision and not put findings in the five criteria. Somebody would talk about how great a project it was or some other circumstance, and they would get usually an approval. But, you know, and so I would say that this may have been important at that time, but the way that the process works now is that in order for me to deem an application complete, the applicant has to state their rationale that supports all five of the criteria. I won't deem it complete until that happens.
So I'd like to send it back to Planning Commission with both profit and cost of development removed.
So I don't agree with that. And if you read it, under no circumstance shall variance be granted on the sole
basis.
I read that.
Right. Right.
So I'm reading that.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
But
they could be considered. They could consider.
I guess you can just take it. Why do we even have the sentence then? Is what you're saying. We just take the whole sentence out.
I'd be fine with that too.
But the intent, I think what they're trying to get is to give some direction to the Board of Adjustment members so that they're not sitting there, oh, well, they're going to have to do something.
Well, I think all this entire sentence has done is ever confuse them. They just need to address the five components. And if they can address that to the satisfaction of planning staff and the Board of Adjustment, that's all that's necessary. I mean, you can change the sentence to say every applicant shall be required to demonstrate that they meet all five criteria. I mean, and then get rid of that if you want to change what B says.
I had not properly read this sentence with the word soul.
And again, if we need to make it in capital letters, you know. But I understand. I said you could get rid of the whole sentence as far as I'm concerned.
Or you could just say each applicant has to address all five, but it probably says that already in A, right?
It does.
Yeah. Let's send it back to Planning Commission with it removed altogether and see what they say.
It's actually come up in Planning Commission.
Yeah.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it was obviously the minority.
I mean, yeah, maybe highlight the word soul just so that that's clearly understood. Okay. Some dummy like me doesn't scan a sentence too quickly.
That's a good point.
Should we add a whole bunch of extra words then? Soul basis of gender and sexual orientation and age? I mean.
Okay. Right. No, just cost of development.
Okay.
Can I make a couple comments? Because this is somewhat near and dear to my heart. I spent the last 6 years because of it.
Have I?
So a couple comments. First, they talk about the five criteria. Okay. One of the difficulties with the five criteria is, would you like me to move?
Yeah, just in case anyone's playing along at home.
Yeah, I have a seat.
From my perspective and a practical experience, one of the difficulties that you have is criteria number one people refer to, and there's a lot of ors, and you can add words like soul and make them big, but people don't always read stuff. And so criteria number one specifically, and I think the issue of cost goes to criteria one, and it says peculiar and exceptional practical difficulties or an unnecessary and unreasonable hardship. Well, consistently, the planning staff and to a certain extent, the Board of Adjustments look at this and they focus on hardship. And this is actually referred to as the hardship criteria, when in reality, peculiar and exceptional practical difficulties or unnecessary and unreasonable hardships. But they don't read the first peculiar and exceptional practical difficulty. And one of the things in all
but
of these...
Let me just ask this, though. But the applicant, when they're addressing those five, has the opportunity to point out which one they're addressing, right?
I understand that. But the problem is staff turns around and says it's not a hardship, and they overlook the exceptional and peculiar and exceptional practical difficulties, which could be the wall, all this other stuff. So I think to the extent that you add costs into that sentence that you're talking about only confuses it and makes it more difficult and easier for someone to say it's not a hardship just because of the costs. And I've heard those words in a Board of Adjustment hearing. Now, moving past that, if you look at the wording that's in there.
So you're satisfied if we remove the whole sentence?
You know, actually...
Well, I don't know if you'll ever be satisfied, but you'll be more satisfied.
I think if you left that sentence, the importance of that sentence is, and I have to find it, is how it's talking about... Where is it?
Here, right here.
Under no circumstances, I think what's important there is personal convenience, special privilege, profit to the extent it relates to commercial. So the example that I've used in the past is the city wanted to put that big development on the end, or that big housing project on the end of town, and one of their arguments were, we can't make this profitable without all these variances. Well, there was a lot of problems with that. But that's a good example of a commercial enterprise and the profit related to a commercial enterprise. The reality is somebody who has a residence isn't typically doing something at their residence because they want to make it more profitable. They're doing something because they're trying to improve their residence and get better use out of their property. And so what I see as the danger in this is when you add in costs or cost of development, you take it out of that commercial realm. And what you're trying to do, I believe, with this sentence is just remind people that, hey, Doug Munger doesn't get this because he's a county commissioner. You know, that makes it special privilege for you just because you're someone important. And I'm not trying to pick on you, but I think that's what...
I couldn't afford it anyhow.
And so I see this sentence as a reminder of the, hey, that guy out there isn't someone special you should do this for. Or, you know, special
privilege.
So what
if we took off cost of development and said profit to the extent it relates to a commercial activity and then just left the sentence like it is?
Yeah, but how many... We don't even have any commercial activities to go through this stuff.
That's all residential stuff.
I mean, I'd rather see you take the word profit out than leave it in. What I'm more concerned about is how item one is referred to as the hardship, when in reality, peculiar and exceptional practical difficulties could be a whole realm of stuff. And when you put cost in there, they can look at the cost and point to number one and say, oh, you don't qualify all of a sudden.
And, Paul, you can say that the Planning Commission has their view on that, but every applicant gets to make their case to the Board of Adjustment. And they can disagree with the planning staff's assessment.
Yes, but I will tell you that in how many years has this sentence been the way it is? And it hasn't been until the last 2 or 3 years. And I've read, and I mentioned this at the Planning Commission, before my variance, I read 5 years of variances because that's what my attorney recommended I do. I can't tell you how many I've attended since then and listened to, and consistently I see different things going on. And it's gotten better in the last couple of years where the Board of Adjustments is approaching these things on a more practical basis. They have had discussions, but it's not really in any of the minutes about their discussions about what profit really means. And they are, from what I've seen, leaning toward looking at profit from the commercial perspective, and now we're changing it and adding in cost.
So my two options that I would support, and you guys can say what you would support, is to remove the sentence altogether or remove profit and cost of development and just leave in personal convenience and special privilege.
So my comment is that it seems to me that if something comes up in front of the Board of Adjustment, it can be addressed simply by... Do you typically attend the Board of Adjustment meetings?
It depends on the case. If it's more complicated, it will.
Okay. Then, you know, that you could make a statement each time, you know, reminding the board members, yes, we have this sentence in here that addresses profit or cost of development, but please read this sentence carefully, not on the sole basis.
I don't like that at all. We need to have written down what our regulations are and not rely on our planning director to make a statement at a hearing.
But I mean,
or tell him to read the code.
I mean, you know, if you read this, it says what it says.
And that's what Board of Adjustment members should be doing, is reading the regulation.
Can I make one comment related to that?
Let us work through this. See what these guys want to do.
Don't use cost of development or profit as the sole reason that you're going to grant.
But you
this.
Can use it as a reason. It is part of number one.
You can use it as one of your reasons.
Right, and
one.
So what I think is a valid point is it's probably confusing the Board of Adjustment.
It may
be. Another comment.
Well,
yes,
my other comment was just, if you remember, the Board of Adjustment is a quasi-judicial body.
Yep.
They're acting as judges. They're interpreting what we've written and making decisions based on that.
Right.
And so my question would be, if you go back and look at any of the decisions that the Board of Adjustments has made in the last 5 years, would you change any of those decisions? And if you would, to me, that would be a reason to change this, to look at something and say, we don't like what they're doing.
We don't know.
Well, I'm saying it. You're being asked to change and give them some other direction. But if you don't know what their rulings have been, how can you say that it needs to be changed?
Well, because one thing I will tell you is it sounds like even you and Chad Phillips agree that this has caused confusion. on applications, that having this word profit in there.
And we haven't heard that many, I mean, of negative feedback on Board of Adjustment hearings.
Well, to be honest with you, I think the Board of Adjustments is moving in a direction that they're comfortable with, which gets me back to the why aren't we looking, if we really want to change the rules that they flow, are we unhappy with their decision? Because if this is common law, then their decisions flow from case to case. So they set whatever the path that they take is, and so now we're adding something into that path that I think only complicates it more.
It's not common law.
I'm comfortable. Let's jerk the sentence out for now and see what they say.
Yeah, I guess the other thing I would offer is
it kind of hurts us by not having this out the way we do and not looking at and looking at the way we do. Yeah,
I would be up with taking it out or just removing profit and cost of development and leaving the other two, because those other two are clearly biased type decisions that a board of adjustment could make. It doesn't go to our five criteria at all. It's reminding people, don't give this guy a variance because he's your brother-in-law special or a judge. Privilege. Yeah.
Yeah, but again, the way the staff reports are structured and the way the meetings flow now is that there are five findings in a motion, and that's each one of the five criteria. And that's it. So if they make a motion to approve, the findings are their rationale for compliance with each one of the five. Well, if we believe that staff, that it's the application supported, then we'll give that language like we typically do. But if we feel that usually number one or number three is not supported, then we'll leave a blank and put a staff note. The motion maker needs to provide rationale while making a motion. And so there really isn't even a place for that in the motion.
Let's take it out for now. Send it back.
Yeah, there's parts of it that I like, but it's not that big of a joke.
Yeah, and just this conversation, this confusion around this sentence, that's why it's here right now. Because this is what it causes it.
But I think it sounds like you're already on the mend on that whole thing. I mean, now they understand they're getting out their five findings, one finding per each thing, and it has to meet all five criteria.
Yeah, because back when this was written, you're right, back when this was written, it wasn't uncommon for the BOA to say, move to approve the blank variance.
Because it costs too much money.
No, just that. Oh, just like move to approve the blank variance with the finding that it complies with Chapter 3.
I'm okay with your logic. I mean, if they comply with all five of the items there, then the rest of it's just a non-issue. I'm fine with taking it out.
And we shouldn't have to write in legislation not to give someone different treatment, no matter what the...
Okay, let's go on. That was fun. Let's go on to the next one.
That was supposed to be the easy one.
Wait, just one more question. Yes. So someone comes in, asks for a variance. Board of, and the neighboring property owners are obviously notified.
Yep.
Board of variance grants the variance. Board of adjustment grants the variance. Do the adjacent property owners have an appeal process? And who do they appeal to?
To the district court.
They can't. They got to go straight to district court.
Yeah,
right.
Wow.
That happened right, maybe just before I got here, and that's the only one I know of in the last couple of decades.
And we lost.
And we lost. Yeah.
That's the Ma Bell thing up on the base of Rabbit Ears,
next to the big
Ben and Dan Ellison Barn. Were serving on as the Board of Adjustment.
And they said no.
But isn't that right?
What's Ma Bell?
No,
it was a parcel that was created by the phone company. And
it's
AF Zone District, but it's
had that little switching station at the bottom of Rabbit Ears, right there next to where the turnoff is. Horse barn.
And the
guy wanted to come in and put a house in there. And we said, no, it's not big enough lot size and it doesn't have access. And so they turned him all the way down and he took it to court and we lost.
Because he didn't have findings in the motion?
Well, it was a grandfathered lot.
Okay.
The BOA just thought it was too small, but could prove his engineering for his septic, he got his water. It was grandfathered, they just thought it was too small.
Bottom line, someone could appeal to the district court if they disagreed with the Board of Adjustments finding, if they thought that they acted capriciously.
Next one.
Next item also has to do with Board of Adjustment while we're at it. And the recommendation was to eliminate Section B, that huge long run sentence, which the intent of B is to list items Board of Adjustment can hear. And essentially,
so where are you at on the memo? The memo?
Exhibit A. Keep turning.
Yeah, I'm on page 5.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right there.
Okay.
And then in the form that you would see, eliminate B is up on the screen there. So the intent is to summarize the 5 criteria. So it's duplicating that as well. So the recommendation is to eliminate B in its entirety, and in lieu of that, create bullet points of what that sentence actually says.
Am I all right with that?
Yes.
Makes sense to me.
You said that there's 5 criteria and you've got 4 bullet points? I'm confused.
The 1 through 4 list is within that paragraph.
Yeah.
It's just the last 2/3 of that paragraph more or less just summarize the 5 criteria. It's unnecessary, again, puts confusion into the discussion. It's unnecessary. So we're not taking anything away, we're just providing clarity.
Brevity is always good.
I like bullets.
If it's still understandable. We all right?
Yep.
Go on to the next one.
All right. So the next one there is... we already went over commuter zone. That's next on there, so agreed to take that out. Next would be 4.19, to create a new use in the land use chart for fractional ownership. This would be similar to how we handle short-term rentals, and the issue has been fractional ownership, or how we utilize the use chart is, if the use isn't listed, it's not permitted. However, people try to say, oh, this is similar to a bed and breakfast or a single-family dwelling or what have you, and sometimes it's better to actually...
So do we have timeshares out there now?
We don't. They are not permitted, but we
Does
have
this
heard...
make them permitted? Then?
No. What this would do is, similar to what we do with short-term rentals right now, it would be listed in our chart, not allowed in any zone district except for the commercial zone district. So the way our zone are,
and I guess my other question, and I'll let you guys, this is all kind of crazy to me too. What gets us past here when we can have some trumped up corporation go buy a house and do the same thing anyhow?
Exactly. Our golf course is that way. It's a fractional ownership.
Is that actual fractional ownership?
I don't know. I haven't gone and looked at
the
structure.
This has an amenity
that operates.
Are you
going to
go research title on every parcel that we have?
The golf course amenities operate under CUP, so I think
it's
a little different. But right. You know, there's a case right now where one of the Creek Ranch homes isn't built yet. It's being proposed for construction at quarter fractions. And, you know, I contacted the listing agent and said, this is not allowed. The first thing that happened is the landowner hired an attorney and the attorney called me. So basically, if it was a little more clear, because he said, well, it's a single family home. So no, it's not. It's multifamily. It's fractional ownership. Just by adding that line saying it's not permitted in the AO zone district would provide clarity.
And it would be similar to this. So short-term rentals. And how everything is blank under every zoning district except for a use by right in the commercial zone district. So
I don't think we're ready to deal with this one today. I mean, this is a pretty big discussion, isn't it?
It's exactly the same as what's enforced right now. It's just providing clarity.
What do you mean what's enforced? We're enforcing something that's not in the regulation?
Well, it is. I mean, because I had this discussion with Eric, and just to make sure we're on the same page, and said that if somebody were to have, like this example with this guy in Creek Ranch, and ask Eric, do you think the regs are strong enough to fight them off just using that approach that it's not a single family use anymore? And Eric said, absolutely. And I said, but do you think it would be clearer, more enforceable, if we actually had a line that said fractional ownership? And Eric agreed with that as well.
So theoretically, 4 people could get together and buy a property under joint, and call it a joint tenancy.
They could buy it under a corporation, too.
I mean, Carrie and Doug and Ted could go in together and say, we're buying this house.
I want Christmas.
But it's single ownership under joint tenancy.
So that would get around one of the problems, because if it was split up under multiple owners, it would actually meet the definition of subdivision. So that would avoid that issue.
Correct.
But the land use issue, the chart, it still wouldn't avoid that. It would still be an illegal land use because it is not a single family.
We could say they were a family. We could be an odd relationship.
Tim, I think the key there is the definition of family that we use is the Supreme Court definition of family. And the many key words, but one that I think applicable here is no more than five unrelated guests.
More discussion on this, more sensitive discussion, because what I'm concerned about is we probably do have a lot of homes in the county that are owned by a corporate entity that multiple families own in that, and they come and use the property and never create a problem. And I don't want us to just throw something in the land use chart that's going to outlaw that.
But that's outlawed right now. It doesn't change anything.
Yeah, but how are we enforcing that?
If we got a complaint that, hey, the home next to me is a fractional ownership, then we would send out the enforcement letter.
Call them right now?
What's that?
What would you call them right now, since we don't call them a fractional ownership?
I would say it's a use that's not allowed under the chart.
Based on the definition of a family.
Well, no, just, I mean, we can't list every possible land use, you know, in the United States on this chart. The way that the regulations are written, that if it's not mentioned, you can't have it.
I know
that's how we would enforce that.
How is ownership a use? I struggle with that. I think we need to talk about this later. What they're doing with it is the use. How they own it is not a use.
Like I said, there are two parts to it. There's the definition of subdivision, and there's the use chart. Every use in the county has to fit into the use chart.
Why are we trying to outlaw multiple families owning a home in Route County together?
Because it's a backdoor to VRBOs.
Yeah, and again, I wouldn't be so worried if it was
four
people, but if it was one every, you know, that you get the week,
you should wait second week, and everybody gets a week.
I think you're right.
I don't think that's occurring.
You're not going to get anywhere in
large
today.
Level county.
You're right. We're not going to come to an agreement on this.
No.
I can agree on that.
And
yeah, I'm not interested really in having, you know.
So would you like us to draw up some options for you going forward, or just more time to discuss this? What would you expect next time?
I don't think we ought to even address it. I think if Eric thinks that he can already go after it under our current code, and this is just going to make it legally easier, I don't know if it's
Eric's not the one that has to answer the questions from people that want to know whether they can do a fractional ownership and has to explain just
what you've been saying no, right?
Right.
Well, I mean, if he continues to say no, when we back him up on it, I'm okay.
Let's move on to the next.
Wait, before we do secondary units, you want to let these guys do their 5-minute thing? So then, because we're moving on to secondary units, and I don't think we're going to do that in 5 minutes either. I don't know. Can we let him?
Joe, come on up.
All right.
Bring your helmet.
You don't need them. Oh, yeah. I guess. Yeah.
Brought my muscle along with me.
Hi, I'm Carrie Hermosinski.
Hi, Billy.
Nice to meet you.
I'm Doug.
Hi,
nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you. What do we got, Joe?
All right. Well, this is the contract for our nurse through the Correctional Healthcare Company, or CCS, that we renew every year, so we can have the inmates having medical, as much medical as we can have.
You were having some discussions about that, and then the potential for MindSprings to be coming in and doing some stuff and having that through here.
So there was a few issues. I know MindSprings and CCS are totally separate. They're separate. MindSprings actually just cut their hours at our jail, which we have to. We'll discuss that another day. Because
MindSprings did.
MindSprings cut their hours because they
gave me too much money.
They need more money. They said they need more money.
And Garrett sent us a big email about that, saying he'd be in to talk to us about it.
Absolutely, and we have a tremendous, huge, huge mental health issue with our population in jail, obviously. So, but the nurse is great to
have. So nothing's changed on this? And this.
It's increased, looks like, by...
Has Eric seen it? Reviewed it?
I emailed it to Eric, and he looked over it.
Okay.
So this was the one from last year.
So why don't you, before you leave, we'll go ahead and approve it for my signature.
Okay.
I'm all right with that.
Just get Eric's stamp.
Get Eric's stamp on it for this year.
Get Eric's stamp?
Yeah.
Okay.
On this one here.
All right.
So I'm good.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I would move to approve the Eighth Amendment to the Agreement for Inmate Health Care Services in Grout County, Colorado, effective January 1st, 2018.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 If you guys want to stick around and listen to secondary, you definitely can.
No, it's probably more pleasant to just go back to the jail.
Listen to the other crazy people.
Yeah. Stop by whenever you want. Go on in. All right. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Have a good
day. All right. You too.
Thank
Take
you guys.
Care.
Nice meeting you.
Nice to meet you too.
Okay. And I have a appointment here too, so we need to move
yeah,
along.
Yeah, we run up against stuff. We can do it later.
So the last item that we had to do with rezoning to the PUD zone district, which is it's a two-step process the way it's laid out in the regulations. We had asked the attorneys to look into whether it was actually necessary, was it in state statute for it to be addressed that way in our regulations, and it's not in state statute or found in the model county land use code, and it's specifically the way our regulations are written with 731 right now that require it to be two-step process. This would just streamline the process a little bit more. Yes, those applications are handled concurrently.
But you're not going to do one without the other.
And we're not. It is the same review criteria in the regulations. So we are just trying to streamline processes. The fees are the same.
And the only thing we're talking about is just the rezoning part of it.
Yeah, so it would be essentially a separate hearing
Yeah, it in essence be automatic.
That is
by
correct.
Approving the PUD, it would automatically
have
a PUD.
You don't have two motions in the same hearing. It would just be one motion.
Exactly.
It's not simplified. It seems like
yep.
Move on.
All right. Moving on to secondary dwelling units. The proposed amendments, there are two. The first, and I would say was mainly the focus of the Planning Commission discussion, had to do with secondary dwelling units being attached. So long as it's attached or part of a primary or accessory structure is what's being proposed. As you know, right now, if you have less than 35 acres, it needs to be attached to that primary dwelling unit. And the conversation started, what really is the difference if you can have an accessory structure, like a detached garage, what difference is there?
When I read over this whole thing, I don't have a lot of problem heartburn with some of this. What is a qualifying accessory structure?
So I guess the one caution that we have is if somebody's going to try to circumvent the code and have a shed and say,
or
I'm going to build a secondary dwelling unit
and
attach
we still
to
need
my
it.
Shed.
And again, I guess I'm not really so burnt up about all this if it's still a cheat. And you guys talked about it with Planning Commission. And
exactly.
So we're trying to accomplish some type of clustering.
Exactly.
And don't put the accessory structure over next to my neighbor.
Right. Well,
so that
it
I
would
don't
still have to be within that 300 feet. That's not
okay.
What's recommended to be changed.
Okay.
So you would still have to be within 300 feet.
We're just allowing it on parcels less than 35 acres.
Correct. To be.
But it could be attached.
To be attached to an accessory structure.
Another structure versus.
Like it could be in the garage instead of next to the house.
Correct.
Yes. But the garage still has to be within 300 feet.
And it would still be supporting the original intent of that ranch compound look and feel.
Or they could just build. I mean, we're also making it possible for someone to build a detached 800 square foot secondary unit.
No. It would have to be part of or attached to a qualifying structure, and that's part of the conversation. So you wouldn't be able to just to build a secondary dwelling unit and not have it be attached to an existing structure, or if you were to build a barn or a detached structure. And I guess the question is, if you were okay with this amendment, what kind of structures Steph is going to come up with?
It seems kind of odd. Basically, we're going to be forcing people to build a garage in order to get their 800 square foot secondary unit.
Well, and what the reality would be is that that garage that's underneath the dwelling unit would support the dwelling unit. I mean, would support the SDU, not the primary.
Right.
You know, and I'm thinking if you guys are leaning this way, what I'd suggest is just 5 acres enough, you can have a detached secondary dwelling unit. That would be easier to enforce. You wouldn't end up with scenarios like that where you've got this, you know, accessory structure that wouldn't have been there, but it needs to be there in order to have a detached secondary dwelling. So
now I'm trying to be more liberal about this.
I'm right behind you.
Okay.
That door. I'm going through it.
Let the record show that Commissioner Hrabosinski said she was liberal.
I called it a liberalization of the rules from the very beginning.
It would be simpler to not have to.
So, what did the Planning Commission think? I mean, I read the minutes.
They seem to be. There wasn't a huge issue, but then they started down another path about. They were saying, well, you know, if we did allow this, maybe on those lots that are less than 35 acres or 5 acres, let's just say, maybe we should shorten in the reins on that 300 foot separation. So
right now, if I have 5 acres and I want to go build a garage, I can build it wherever I want, right? Or does it have to be within 300 feet of my house?
You can build a garage wherever you want, as long as you meet setbacks.
I know. So the thing is then we're actually making people that build these things be more clustered than the typical home, right?
Right.
So if I meet setbacks, I can build my house in my garage and park. Right. But if I have a secondary unit.
But you wouldn't be able to put a secondary unit.
Yeah, if you built your garage and you had more, and it wasn't within 300 feet, we wouldn't allow you to put a secondary dwelling associated with that garage.
I agree. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
I know, but if people want to build a secondary unit in their garage, it's going to be better from a planning perspective on 5 acre lots because they're going to have to cluster.
Yeah.
Yep.
So from a planning perspective, we're forcing people to be better.
Yeah, so let's just get back to the heartburn. What's the heartburn about having the accessory structure there first? Well, I mean, I'm still failing.
It doesn't have to be. That was just, if you read that in the planning packet, it was a suggestion, another option. In other codes, we were skimming through in order to have a secondary or be eligible for a secondary dwelling unit. That place that you were going to put it needed to be 5 years. Like, you couldn't just build a garage wherever you wanted on the property and then qualify for a secondary dwelling unit. So essentially it would...
We want the compound look. The
right.
Farm
and
compound.
And
it would ensure that would support
garage,
that.
All they really want to do is build a secondary unit.
I
which
agree
is why, which was a big part of the reason that we were relaxing this anyway. So
Let's send it back that way to the Planning Commission and see what they say. It's just a work session.
Okay.
So the Planning Commission kicked that around a bit where, if you were eligible for a secondary dwelling unit, then you would be eligible for a detached secondary dwelling unit. But if you're between 5 and 35 acres, maybe it shouldn't be 300 feet. Maybe it should be a tighter compound, a tighter cluster. So is that something you'd be interested in?
I'd 300 feet is quite a ways away.
I'd like to see
No, 300 feet is one
I don't think we're going to change to 300 feet,
that's
but we need to say that if you build a detached secondary unit, I mean, what we don't want is someone that builds a house, builds their detached secondary unit, and then builds a garage over here. Then we're really creating a bunch of buildings, right?
Right.
So it needs to be drafted that if you're going to have the detached unit on
under 35 acres that you cannot have a separate garage. And I don't know how you write that.
I guess the other thing, I can figure it out, complicated things. I mean, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, but I wouldn't. It seems to me that it would be fair to say you can't, whether it's 300 feet or some other footage, you can't build your secondary unit closer to your neighbor's house than you would build it to your own.
We have setbacks.
Oh, yeah, 50 feet, but...
You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, no,
put the secondary unit right.
I can't imagine how we're going to put that
in. That would be hard to put in the
pool. I understand...
Right.
What you're getting at.
And it could be that, you know, someone wants to build a house and garage and then just build a secondary unit. That's fine, too, but...
Well, there's nothing that prevents them at a future date building a garage 500, 600 feet away.
Well,
they have their main house, can have their secondary unit within 300 feet, and if they want to put a garage over here...
Well, that's what I'm saying, is we should write it so they can't.
Oh, okay.
So that future building needs to be attached. You know, I mean, there's... That's true.
Totally support.
Okay.
So it needs to
you
be
had a
part
comment?
Of
I just wanted to say that structure. I thought the concept when we went from you could do the separated however 35, if we're coming down, I thought we were trying to limit the amount of buildings. And I think the argument is nobody's really going to build a garage just to put a secondary dwelling unit there.
Oh, they do.
Oh, yeah.
They do.
Or if you have a garage, you can do a lean-to and put in a residential unit. We are limiting the buildings, and that's why we're saying if you build a detached secondary unit in the future, you can't go build another garage outside of the clustering distance. It has to be attached.
It has to be attached to the unit. And that makes sense. I guess what I was getting at and what I was trying to say at the Planning Commission was if you make them be together... then you limit the number of buildings that you're going to have, which seemed like what we were trying to do for the 5 to 35. We didn't want more structures and more structures and more structures.
Spread out.
So you would just have one together. So, I mean, I suppose if you say, hey, you can build a secondary building unit, but if you want to build anything else, you have to attach it to it.
That's what we're saying, is between 5 and 35, you only get two buildings.
Well, you get sheds.
Well, I mean, these kind of buildings, primary or accessory.
And my other question would be, qualified structure? So would you define a qualified structure as a garage or a barn?
We don't know. We're sending this back to Planning Commission for more discussion.
So the barn doesn't even figure in here. The qualifying structure is going to be a house or a personal garage. You could still build another barn on 35 acres.
But... can you put your secondary dwelling unit in a barn? So, in other words...
if it's within the clustering distance and you can get a building permit.
Yeah.
Okay.
I got to run.
Okay, so we'll do the second one, I guess, at a later time.
That works.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's more controversial, so we don't want to do it without you.
What was it? Which one's it?
It's allowing
all this
secondary units on... parcels under 2 acres that are served by central water and sewer service in the unincorporated areas of the county. So like Steamboat 2, Silver Spur Heritage Park.
I thought we already approved all of those.
No.
Not in
still five
not, not less
if
than
they
5 acres.
Oh, they have 5 acres.
So this amendment is for
if
all
they
residential
have,
districts.
If they have water and sewer, I'm fine with that.
We only did it in the AF last time.
Yeah,
yes.
And we already know the treehouse doesn't want anything to do with that because they don't have, and let them take care of their own covenants.
Yeah, you sent the letter.
Okay.
So are you all right with that?
The last one. For now.
So we can come back next time.
I thought we had already talked about that out of Steamboat 2. Steamboat 2, you were allowed to have a secondary dwelling unit because they were on central water and sewer.
We did it in the AF zone district,
and for 5 acres.
MRE.
But we didn't address water and sewer at all.
We did not.
That's why it was 5 acres, because
right.
You had to have a septic.
No, because most of those high, medium, or low density residential lots are eligible for a duplex.
Correct.
But under further evaluation, like Steamboat 2 Metro District, most of them are too small for a duplex. So this would give an option for a secondary dwelling.
Yeah, I'm
fine with that. Yeah. So they have central water and sewer.
I am too.
All right. Thank you.
And just, you know, Chad, the little problems I pointed out on the sign code with the sentence that
I have them written down for when we discuss.
Yeah,
yes.
This where that just ends with the word.
Are we looking at our sign code again?
No, we're just
for the next housekeeping list.
Yes.
That's a typo.
Yeah.
We have that's the end of the sentence.
Oh, okay.
It's got the word or.
Do we think it complies with First Amendment? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's based off of that. I forget what the name of it. The Supreme Court decision was in Arizona last year.
I have it, the one that we discussed. Yeah.
Well, then we're ahead of most.
Okay.
We go back to a planning conference last year and this year. There's a new sign code class and everything. So,
you know, the bottom line is